Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Roll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. A man who knows about the Clippers, Dan Wyke from the Orange County Register. How's it going?
Hello, Zachary. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm sleep deprived and I'm irritable, but other than that, I'm great.
Playoff basketball.
Only three days in, and I'm already like this. I'm gonna be.
Sounds like you're trying to quit smoking or something. Like you're irritable, you're not sleeping well.
Yeah, it feels like I'm trying to quit smoking. It really feels like I have like there's some kind of addiction I'm trying to get over, which I'm sure is marginalizing actual people with addictions. So that's great.
I know what it is. I actually know what the addiction is, and it's Rubio withdrawal.
Oh.
And you'll get over it. It'll be all right.
You nailed it. God, when he retires, I'm going to be a mess.
Just look at some puppies or something like that. You'll be fine.
It's not the same. Speaking of not the same, the Clippers' effort in Game 2 was not the same as what we saw in Game 1. And you were there.
You're a pro. Yeah, it was pretty much a bloodbath. It was a game that I thought they would win. I didn't think they would with 40. I thought it would be a little bit closer. And I really think that was the Clippers' ceiling in a lot of ways. You know, even though Chris Paul still didn't have like a terrific game, but that was pretty much them like hitting on all cylinders. You know, Danny Granger, Ido Turkoglu knocking down threes. Let's just repeat that: Danny Granger, Ido Turkoglu knocking down a lot of threes
in 2014. In the year 2014, yeah. This happened.
Yeah, it was crazy. There was a lot of things like that happened, and ultimately, I feel like. You know, I still think they're in the driver's seat to win the series, Zach. They're the better team. They're more talented. They're generally better. I mean, they're thought to be better coached. That should matter. Those are the things that should matter here.
Yeah, and, no, I agree. I mean, I think that, you know, especially without Andrew Bogut, like, the Warriors can throw some weird stuff at them, but I wrote about this last night, like, a full complement of weapons at Doc Rivers' disposal, like, you're not expecting a 40-point win all the time, but my God, like they have so much.
Yeah, they can score so many different ways, and that's the thing. It's like, you know, I mean, and I wrote this last night. Like, there was a lot of things that went into that win, but I mean, most of it is like, my God, Blake Griffin in this series has just a tremendous finish. But no Bogut, they've got no chance against him, and I would imagine at some point they're going to have to start doubling him. And, oh, yeah, great. He's one of the top five passing big men.
Right.
Too. So, yeah, I mean, it's just they're in trouble when it comes to that front. Now, I don't think the Clippers are going to win, you know, three straight here. But they're in a position, I think, where they have tremendous confidence. Even after game one, they had tremendous confidence. They felt like they played pretty close to as poorly as they could play, and they were still in the game. And really feel like they should have won, had a chance. Chris Paul really botched a 3-on-1 fast break, which is super out of character.
Right.
And they felt like that was still a game they should have won. And, you know, Blake Griffin played 19 minutes. Well, he had no fouls in this game, and they won by 40. So I think we'll probably settle somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, no, I agree. About game one, what was the sense from that team, though? I mean, clearly you have to be frustrated because the officiating was just atrocious. Like, both ways. It was just awful. There was no flow to the game. You know, Blake Griffin and Andre Iguodala hardly got to play, and it was just kind of embarrassing from a league standpoint. And then the play on the court, it was close. They had a good stretch in the third quarter, but I found it really interesting that instead of a lot of like, oh, the officials, we got Chris Paul saying Blake's got to avoid that. Like, I thought that was a very interesting tactic, and I wonder what the mood of the team was after that game.
Yeah, I mean, they were bummed about the officials. This is a team that has had their kind of run-ins with refs over the course of the last couple years. Always one of the league leaders in technicals, and they don't get their technicals from, like, pushing and
right.
Shoving. Like, that's not their real MO there. They get it from complaining. And I think that that's been something they've been working on trying to avoid and not let that. Doc Rivers calls it clutter. And so I feel like that's been one thing that they've tried to address. So I wasn't that surprised that they didn't, like, go into that post game and be like, oh, the refs screwed us in this. You know, I wasn't that surprised. I think that the most surprising thing that came out of the post game for me in that night was when Chris Paul referred to Blake Griffin as their go-to guy.
Yeah.
That's the first time I'd heard him say that. And I mean, I think you see it. I don't know that Blake Griffin's their best player. But that gap is so much closer than people realize in terms of their importance to that team. And I think when you watch a game like last night, you can see it. I mean, he showed everything last night. That was the full range right there. He's hitting jumpers. He's making free throws. You know, when David Lee tried to guard him, he scored in the post. Zach, there was one play that really stood out to me. He had Steph Curry on a switch.
That play came to mind. Yeah.
Okay. And normally, and I think last year, maybe even in November, most big men in that situation are going to just back Steph Curry down. And they're going to muscle him, and then they're going to wait for the double team and try to make a play. Instead of doing that, as soon as he made contact, he kind of hooked him a little bit and spun baseline and had an easy finish. And it was like there was never a chance to double team. It was such a mature decision in the post for a guy who, you know, I think is going to probably finish either third or fourth on the MVP balloting. You know, you could maybe even talk about him maybe even being a smidge higher. It's crazy how good he's gotten so quickly.
Yeah, he's fantastic. It was on full display. That play was last night was pretty cool because that kind of play is similar to when a big man gets switched out on a guard defending him and the guard settles for a 2-point jumper. I'm just like, what are you doing? Go to the basket. Like I get it. I get why that decision happens, but like you have an advantage, use the advantage instead of taking a contested three or a contested jumper over a guy that's so much bigger than you. And with a big man getting a small guy, they do kind of back down and slow the game and just wait for that double team to come and then react. But, you know, he spun baseline, went in for an easy score. It looked like the Warriors had no thoughts of even rotating on that play. I mean, it was kind of stunning how bad they looked defensively. They didn't look that bad defensively in game one, but in game two, like, the absence of Bogut was very present.
Yeah, it was that. I mean, like, you could see, like, the double team was maybe going to come. Like, it was like, you know, there was a little indecision, I think. You know, I mean, let's be real. They were still in a lot of foul trouble in this game.
Yeah.
You know, there's no question. I mean, you know, and Mark Jackson has made it clear that he is not going to sit guys when they're in foul trouble. So when things happen, like, you know, Klay Thompson gets a third in the first half, you know, or something like that, it has sort of a deflating effect, especially on the road. The crowd was, you know, really into Golden State fouls last night. Like, that seemed to make them very happy. And so, you know, like, those are the things, like, I mean, here, Staples Center was great last night. Staples Center is not normally a hostile environment to play. People are far too concerned with other things. And it was really loud last night, too. So I think that there was sort of, like, it was a more controlled, like, bloodthirstiness from, like, the Clippers and from, like, the fans in terms of not wanting to necessarily go into the series and fight and make it, you know, oh, we're going to crush these guys and stuff like that. You know, they did it with basketball this time, and I think that's going to be the key for them, is if they can play that free again and not worry about all the other stuff. You know, I think they're in a pretty good spot.
How hype does Frankie Muniz get at these Clippers games? Does he still go to these Clippers games?
I was going to say, I've never seen him at a Clipper game. Who was there last night? Let me think.
Billy Crystal. They keep showing Billy Crystal.
Billy Crystal was there. Chauncey Billups was there.
So the A-listers.
I know. Who else? Cedric the Entertainer.
Oh, okay. Right? I thought he was dead.
No, that's pretty
sick. Oh, right. Rest in peace.
all those keys of comedy. Bernie Mac's really that one. His career might be those.
Oh, hello.
Take that, Cedric the Entertainer. Trying to think who else I saw. Oh, and the guy who did my root canal last week was there.
Okay, that's good.
Seriously, he was sitting like a row in front of me.
Oh, that's got to make you feel good, though. Like, he's clearly a good dentist to the point where he can afford very good seats.
Yeah, that's a good point. He had really good seats. And I wish I would have known he was a Clipper fan prior to him doing the root canal. I feel like maybe I would have gotten a little better painkiller treatment or something.
Unless he's not happy with your coverage.
Well, who isn't happy with my coverage? I mean, what are you implying?
That's a good point. So what happened with Doc Rivers and Jermaine O'Neal? I know Doc said that they're both Libras, and so that's why...
Yes.
That's why they got into it. Could you tell what was being said? Did anybody know?
No, I mean, like, I think it was like a I might have let Brennan get the F out of here.
Okay.
I might have or something like that. It was fun that it happened.
Yeah.
I think. You know, like, at first I had to check to make sure they weren't teammates, because you forget how Jermaine O'Neal's been in the league for, like, 35 years.
He's so old.
And, by the way, he's super fun to watch. Like, he has aged very gracefully in terms of, like, the way he's come back from this injury and become sort of this other kind of player.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he could be – I don't know if he's going to be done or not after this year, but I feel like he's a guy who could keep playing because of his – the style he's adopted here. But, yeah, I mean, like, when you've got players and coaches yelling at each other, when you've got players and players yelling at each other, when you've got Steph Curry chucking mouth guards, you've got Murray Spates, you know, on the fringe of something nuts. It's a fun series when it comes to that stuff. It's amazing how so far it's been, like, Matt Barnes has been sort of the voice of calm.
Which is always disturbing.
Yeah. He's like the guy, he like has the least amount of axe to grind. He like, you know, loved his time in Golden State, and he's, you know, it's funny. He's just been like, you know, they know that they can't give away points. And that's, like, it goes back to kind of the complaining about calls. Like, they're just not in a position where they're good enough to give away free technicals. They just know they can't do it. So, kind of putting some of that stuff, you could see last night that it was more, obviously they were losing by 40, and that's going to lead to a lot of frustration, but I felt like it was more Golden State trying to chip at the Clippers versus the other way around. But I don't fault that strategy. I mean, it works. It can work. It worked in the Christmas game,
right?
You know, where they got Blake Griffin tossed, and that made a huge difference in the game. I don't know that they're going to – that's a sustainable strategy over the course of a series, but I would imagine – that, you know, especially if they're having to play guys like Hilton Armstrong and stuff like that, like, you know, I wonder what'll happen if like a guy like Hilton Armstrong decides to try to take a shot at Blake Griffin, you know, to rattle him and stuff like that. And I don't know that I necessarily fault that strategy.
No, I mean, I think as long as you're not being dangerous about it, you know,
sure.
Like, if you're not, like, yeah, getting cheap shots, like, no, you should try to get the other guy rattled. That's what scoring against a defense is supposed to do. It's supposed to rattle them in a sense, right? Like, that's what trash talk is. Like, that's a great strategy. What I loved about that Doc Rivers Jermaine O'Neal exchange is immediately they ran a post up for DeAndre Jordan against Jermaine, and he scored. And like, that was, to me, that was like a cool, like, Vinny Del Negro would have never done that. He would have taken DeAndre out.
Well, I was going to say, DeAndre might not have been playing. Probably the biggest difference.
Right.
You know, and it's like here. I mean, the differences between the Doc Rivers and Del Negro kind of eras at this point. And it's really, you know, I had a conversation last night, a really long conversation last night about Vinny Del Negro and kind of what his future is in this league. And because he really hasn't, he's been maligned for sure by people like you.
Oh, wow.
And the internet. Internet people. Well, everybody, actually. He's come down pretty hard on Vinny Del Negro as a coach. But he's won. He's been in the playoffs. And he's got, at this point, you know, he's got a fair amount of experience, and he's improved as a coach every year. So, you know, is he a guy who, when you look at, like, these jobs that are open, I haven't heard his name mentioned yet, you know, as a potential candidate anywhere. And that doesn't really surprise me. I think the thing that he needs to do is he needs to go be an assistant coach, doesn't he?
Yeah, shouldn't absolutely.
If he was an assistant, like, 1 year in, say, like, San Antonio, like, which, by the way, I feel like he could. He played there. You know, him and Pop have a pretty good relationship. You know, wouldn't that just be, like, tremendous imagery have for him?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, guys like him, guys like well, probably not Scott Skiles at this point, but guys like him, guys like Sam Mitchell, like, I feel like those guys need to go be assistants. Like, if you want to get back into head coaching, you only have so long where you're a name that people will really consider. And,
mm-hmm.
You either have to go coach in college and prove that you can do it there, or you've got to go be an assistant for a really good team.
Yeah, and I just don't know what Vinny's sort of cachet is around, like, the league in terms of, you know, what do people think of him in front offices? You know, do they think of him the way that, you know, writers and you know, people who watch a lot of games think of him? And here, I'm not suggesting that Vinny Del Negro is the world's greatest head coach. That's not at all what I'm suggesting. I'm merely suggesting he's probably not as bad as people think he is.
Yeah, I mean, we live in a world in which Randy Whitman has taken a team to the playoffs. Sure, it's in the East, but this has happened. Like, Vinny can't be worse than Randy Whitman.
I don't know. Do we know how good of a coach Scott Brooks is?
I feel like he's a good coach. I don't know. I don't think he's a great coach, but I feel like he's a good coach. He's good-ish.
Good, right? I mean, I feel like if you put Vinny Del Negro on the Thunder bench, okay, which, shout out Oklahoma City for putting that on your head. Let's put him on the Thunder bench for a minute. I don't know how different they are.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, this is a weird tangent, sorry.
But like I said, I like that DeAndre Jordan got to score against Jermaine O'Neal right away.
I love
the way Jordan is playing in the first two games.
Yeah, he's been crazy active. He's a guy. It's funny, after the game I talked to him a little bit about the defensive player of the year voting, and he is not happy. Like, you could tell. Like, it was obvious that he was upset. I felt like because it was public and stuff, and I had to vote, I had to man up and tell him why I didn't vote for him. I voted for him second. I voted for Joakim Noah. And, you know, and he was like, cool, all right. And you could tell, he was like, put it away. Like, for everybody. Like, the chip on his shoulder right now is gigantic. And it's fun because he used that chip last summer to kind of make this leap. And he's a guy I think this offseason is going to take another big step kind of into this hyper-athletic Tyson Chandler mold where, he also catches outrageous lobs. Like, I don't know what his ceiling is, but it's high. And who would have thought that, like, when, you know, and I was guilty as anybody, when Doc Rivers was talking about him as sort of the third member of their big three, how kind of outrageous I thought that was.
Yeah.
He's their third most important player, and it's not really close.
Yeah, no, it's not close at all. And it's funny that, you know, they kind of got stuck into that 4-year, what is it, 4 years, $44 million for him. It doesn't look like that looks like a pretty good contract right now.
Yes.
I mean, that
very,
looks
like very tradable if they wanted to. I don't think they would, but it's like, who wouldn't take that on?
Right. Yeah. Very, like, very tradable. It's great value. It's kind of turned into like sneakily like one of the better contracts in the league.
Yeah. And I mean, fun little side note, if the Clippers hadn't matched, he would have been on the Warriors.
Yeah.
And who knows what that team looks like.
He'd be yelling at Doc Rivers right now.
He would probably be yelling at him. He'd be yelling at somebody for sure.
Yeah.
He's a guy, I think, look, they can't really count on him to score. He's scored so far in this series, and it's, I think, if you can pencil him in for 8 or 10 points just based on him being so much bigger than anybody else Golden State can put on the floor, so much more athletic, I think a good use of him, and he's accepted that. It's funny, you mentioned like going to the post, like Doc always talks about they never call plays for DeAndre Jordan,
right?
Because why would you on that team? You know, he's their fifth best offensive player usually when he's on the floor, almost always, and so they treat him as such. But he gets his baskets by being active. I mean, his shot blocking so far has been outrageous. I mean, he's been playing with like so much energy. And this is a guy who played in 82 games this year. I mean, I think he's not going to get enough credit. Spoiler, I guess, homer alert or whatever. I voted for him second and most improved player, too. So I'm sure he'll be probably upset with me about that. But, you know, I think he took a giant leap this year. He's so important to them. And I'm happy for him that people are getting to see it.
How do you feel about your votes being public?
It made me more nervous.
Did that actually factor in?
No. I mean, I didn't think about it when I was voting. But I was always going to take it seriously, but I took it even probably a little more seriously.
Okay.
Maybe a little too much time, like, looking at stuff. I don't know. I kind of like that it's public. I mean, I feel like I'm pro accountability. I'm pro transparency. Except when it comes to these official emails. I don't know what those do. I don't know what the point of those are.
I don't get those either.
It's sort of like, well, how about this? So, like, I'm sure of Dwight Howard's other 5 files. Was there probably at least one questionable call in there?
Yeah. Right?
Right. So sometimes if you go to replay, you're like, okay, well, that's not really fine. Like, isn't that just as important?
Or what? Or like, what about like? Oh, in the third quarter, he actually smacked the crap out of this guy, but
Yeah.
But we didn't call it, like, so maybe it evened out, you know?
Yeah, where's the email about him elbowing, you know, Robin Lopez in the stomach?
Right.
That's him, right? Yeah. You know, like where's that email? You know, at what point are we just, am I going to spend all of my time opening up emails about calls I would miss? And I just don't know what it accomplishes. Like, I think it's great that means, like, they're looking at refs. Funny, voice of reason, Matt Barnes, his idea is he just thinks that the NBA should just make, like, kind of, like, official grades public.
Yes, I agree with that.
It's like, you know, but that's, I mean, of course, I mean, it's Matt Barnes' idea, so obviously,
yeah,
it would be nuanced and well thought out.
So. Right. I think the thing with, like, the official emails, too, is, like, all right, I do like that they will admit, oh, we screwed up that call. Like, that is something, like, they shouldn't hide from it, especially after the whole Donahue thing. Like, you should be able to admit, but there needs to be some kind of, I guess, like, reward for it or something. Like, maybe they get, like, an extra 20-second timeout in the first half of the next game, or, like, I don't know. Like, there's got to be something. You can't start them out with 2 points for the next game. That's ridiculous, but there's got to be,
like, an extra $40 on your salary cap.
Right, yeah, you get, like, You get 10% higher on your mid-level exception this year, or maybe they make a donation to a charity in your team's name.
Okay, I mean, I just feel like I think there needs to be a clearer bar for, like, which bad calls we're gonna talk about.
Right.
So it's like, I mean, so that we, like, essentially, and they would never say this, but it's like, we're only gonna talk about calls. Bad calls that happen in the final 90 seconds. Other than that, like, you know, or otherwise, it's just like, at what point, seriously, will someone say, oh, well, at the end of the first half, there was a horrible call that cost us, you know, a possession. You know, why not admit to that? And why aren't we admitting to that? It's just, I think it opens the door to it even being more embarrassing for the league because, honestly, officiating is not great. It never is. It's a really hard job. When you go to a lot of NBA games, you do. It'd be impossible to officiate an NBA.
Oh my God! I tried officiating a scrimmage between the freshman team and the sophomore team when I was coaching high school, and
awesome.
it was one of the hardest things I've ever had to do. Like, because I just found myself watching the game, and I was like, oh right, I have to call a foul, and then I would make stuff up. That's the great thing is, like, the kids were like, that's not a foul, and I'm just like, well, it actually, you know, it looked like. From my angle, it looked like he didn't touch you. When really, I was just lying. I was just flat out lying to these kids because I just wasn't paying attention. I didn't see it.
I feel like I would watch a show about you as a basketball coach.
Like a reality show or just like a sitcom?
Both.
Okay.
Could it be both?
Okay.
Like, I think I would watch that because I feel like you would be, like, kind of laid back, but at the same time hyper competitive.
Yeah.
Unnecessarily competitive.
Yeah, I mean, I will say this. I coached with a friend of mine, Jimmy Spencer, who's a basketball writer. And and he was head coach, I was his assistant. And I will say that a lot of times it turned into me, like, my two biggest things during practices were, one, remember not to swear at children, because they're all 14 years old. And two, try not to turn everything into an outside shooting competition. Because I can shoot and these kids can't because they're, you know, JV basketball players in high school. So that was, I knew I had an advantage.
It was like, was it like the scene in Hoop Dreams when Bo Agee is like, want to see a raid? Let it raid. Was that just you with some poor crying 14-year-old child?
That's pretty much what it was. Yeah,
that's what I imagine.
Yeah, it was just hey, you want to gamble your lunch money for a 3-point shootout right now? They're like, no, Coach Harbor. Like, you're gonna do it.
You're gonna do it. You're gonna run. yeah, Zach. I feel like that's something that needs to happen again. And I mean, now that all these, like, European guys are gonna, you know, potentially be head coaches in the NBA, I feel like that you should probably throw your name out there. Are you interested in the Wolves job?
I mean, I wouldn't turn it down. I would talk to Flip about it. I have ideas.
Could you work with Ricky?
Oh my
God!
Would
that be? I mean, or but.
What, do you mean, like, because of the restraining order?
Yeah, he's too biased. I mean, like, would you be able to look at him and not you know, hear like Peter Gabriel in your eyes, like in your head, would you be able to concentrate?
He throws up a wild, like wildly awful layup attempt that doesn't even come close. He comes back down. He's like, sorry, coach. Don't worry about it, Ricky. You're great.
Yeah, I feel like he's showing up like outside of like this condo, like Minneapolis, with like, you know, the trench coat and the stereo over your head.
Like, hey, Ricky, I want to go over some film. Oh, what game? Oh, I just want to watch Summer Catch with you. Like, let's just pop this in and enjoy some Freddie Prinze Jr.
I feel like if Simmons can campaign to be the Timberwolves GM, like, you can certainly campaign. You're talk hoops. You talk to people on video games, Zach.
I do.
I don't think people understand that, but yeah, that's, like, a pretty big deal.
It is a pretty big deal. I'm basically a major part of a video game. I mean, you know, major might be an exaggeration, but who's to say? Who's to measure out what's important in a video game?
I remember before I knew you when I would get tweets from you in 2K.
Wow.
I would be like, who the hell is this guy?
Who is this handsome devil?
And why does he look so tired in that picture?
I was tired in that picture. I was horribly tired.
Yeah. Yeah, when is that photo from, by the way?
That was like 2001.
I think that's the best part. In NBA 2K12, you were using a photo from 2001. You're the reason why women don't trust, like, OKCupid and stuff like that.
Oh, I catfished all these gamers.
So, yeah, the Clippers are playing good, though.
Yeah, no, the Clippers are playing great. Officiating's hard.
What have you thought of the other series? What's been like the other? What series are you most excited about watching?
After that game Sunday night, like the Rockets Blazers, just was so fun. It was so good. Like that, if you give me 7 games of that, I would be very happy. I love the Beverly Lillard matchup. I love the Howard Aldridge matchup. I love the wings of the Rockets against the wings of the Blazers. Like, it's just a really perfectly matched up series. I'm into that. I've enjoyed Thunder Grizzly so far, even though it's not pretty basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm actually kind of excited about this Raptors Nets series.
Yeah, that's kind of fun too, because it's gone like international.
Right, because it's in Canada.
No, I mean, in terms of, like, there's, like, weird sort of, like, you know, national pride on the line, too, now.
Okay, yeah.
That's what, like Masai played that card. It's, you know, it's Bret Hart, Steve Austin, circa 1995.
Oh, see, I was out of wrestling at that point.
Yeah, that's a weird reference, but that was...
I never watched Steve Austin. I've never seen one wrestling match with Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Okay, he drinks beer and stuff, but no, and he's American mostly.
Right.
And he would, you know, they would do things like they would have like a flag on a pole match, and like, you know, like you would try to grab the Canadian flag if you were Canadian, and it turned into pretty hostile.
I guess this is better than the Buried Alive matches that they had. But that's a weird goal to get. Like, hey, go get that flag.
Yeah. Well, there's a whole game based on this.
Right. Right.
It's not that weird of an idea.
If you had said like Sergeant Slaughter against the Iron Sheik, that means like that's a little before my time, but I would watch the videos of it.
Similar. Okay, it'd be like the series is like Sergeant Slaughter versus the Iron Sheik. If the Raptors were playing out of, say, like, Turan.
Right. Okay.
They were the Turan Raptors.
Yeah.
Instead of the Toronto Raptors.
Right.
Which, by the way, I heard is an Adam Silver initiative. Get a team into Iran.
Okay, that seems dangerous.
4-point line and Iran.
Yeah. And a draft wheel. Oh, and the draft wheel, yeah. Those are the four biggies on his list.
Yeah, I think you're right though about the Blazers and the Rockets as being a fun series, because I look at those guys and it's like everybody's strengths like matches fits perfectly with like the other team's weaknesses.
Yeah,
you know, yeah, particularly out on the perimeter where you know, where James Harden has become just like a defensive virtuoso. Like, it is a blast watching him defend, but at the same time, like, especially when you put next to Patrick Beverley, when it's just like, I mean, they couldn't be further apart in terms of defensive intensity.
Right.
And just kind of watching those guys, like the way that they balance each other, it's super fun. I love watching Damian Lillard, even though he doesn't really guard anybody either. But it's a lot of fun watching him. And you're right. The teams are kind of almost identical in how they're constructed.
And how they attack. Yeah, it's very similar.
You know, rangy wings and stuff like that. I mean, like Batum and Chandler Parsons are really similar in terms of their length and stuff. Yeah. It's just you can do so many different things. It's a fun series. I'm looking forward to that. I kind of want to see. I'm slightly intrigued by Bulls Wizards. And mostly because John Wall's gotten really good too.
Yeah, he's fun. He's really fun. He's really good.
Really good.
I love the attitude of good Nene. Like good Nene is just like he's just like this very boisterous, like I'm gonna kick your ass kind of guy. Like I love his confidence.
Yeah, I mean him like Gortat. That's a fun team. I mean, you know, Trevor Reese has had a really good year.
Yeah, he randomly has 40-point games, which is just weird.
Well, I mean, he's one of those guys too. I mean, like people forget about him. Like he's not. I mean, he's a guy who is probably not as valuable as his contract, but and because of that, people kind of scoff at him. But he's a valuable player. I think on not necessarily contender, but like a team that could win a playoff series, certainly.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, don't people want guys that shoot threes and play defense?
That's kind of a role in the NBA.
Yeah, they just don't want to pay. What does he make?
I think he's like at 7.5 or something like that this year, somewhere around there.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I feel like that's sort of why people don't like him. Just so you know, by the way, Keith Turkoglu and Ryan Hollins are walking in at the same time right now to the Clippers practice facility.
Oh, if you had a picture of that, I'd hashtag it True Detective Season 2.
my camera, I'm talking on my camera right now. I can't do it. But, the Western Conference right now, though, is like, it's outrageous how good these playoffs are going to be. I don't know, you know, say if San Antonio, Dallas is going to go, you know, more than five games or even more than four games, but like, it's fun watching Dirk work. And, you know, it's been fun watching this Monte Ellis resurgence, another player that I think got undervalued. You know, I think it's San Antonio just is, like, you know, humming along. It's like, they're still, when they do it well, I still think they're the most fun team to watch in the NBA.
I mean, Tony Parker is one of the most underrated players in terms of how he plays basketball and in terms of, like, entertainment value. He's fun to watch. Like, he's really entertaining on the court.
Yeah, he is. I agree. And it's fun to watch. I think it's fun to watch Duncan.
Yeah.
Which is weird because he spent a career kind of carving out this image of being not fun.
And he's got, like, this sneaky attitude. Like, he's a guy that plays, like, very pissed off and very competitive, but he's got this, like, stone-cold face, so you don't see it. Mm-hmm. But he gets, like, these, like, kind of, like, dickish streaks in him. It's amazing.
Yeah, he's a killer out there. It's just right now this idea that the NBA isn't good and that it needs to be totally overhauled. Like, I guess if I lived in Philadelphia, I'd feel probably differently about it.
Right.
But you know, from what I've seen this year, I mean, I've seen awesome basketball, and I don't know that we need to make any big sweeping changes.
I'm not into other than
an Iranian franchise.
Right. Other than the Turan Raptors, I don't understand. Like, I just don't get the point of, like, the top 16 get in. Like, if we're going to have conferences, let's make them worth it. And I think we need conferences just from a scheduling logistics standpoint. And, mm-hmm. like, I think, like, you know, when you're building your team, how good you have to be in your conference to make the playoffs. So do your job and build a team that's good enough and then have them execute and play. Like for example, like the Minnesota Timberwolves, they knew they needed 45 to 49 wins this year to make the playoffs, and they've won 40 games. Now, that is not an unfair thing because the Hawks made it with 38 in the East. The Hawks didn't have the same road they had. The Hawks knew how good they had to be. The Wolves knew how good they had to be, and, you know, you execute what your situation is.
No, I would agree with that. I think, you know, if this is a problem, say, like 3 years in a row, or something where it's just, like, ridiculously unbalanced. And, again, when I watch the East teams in the playoffs, when I look at a Wizards team, when I look at the Raptors and the Nets, you know, those teams are probably a little better than we gave them credit for.
Absolutely.
But when you watch those guys, like, over the course of a series, I think I look at teams that I don't know – if they're playoff teams in the West necessarily, but I think that there's talent there, and I think there's room for growth there.
Yeah.
With those teams, like, I think the Wizards could be better. I mean, Brad Beal's going to get better. You know, maybe Otto Porter's a player, so, well, maybe not, but, like, who knows, you know? I mean, and for me, like, if there was maybe a provision or something, and this could, I don't know, this is too weird, but, like, if you were, for like 3 straight years, the Eastern Conference has sub 500 teams in the playoffs, and there's a team in the West who is above 500. Maybe that team gets in at like the East 8 or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, I could live with that.
Yeah, I could be fine with that. Like, I don't like the idea of turning the league into a gimmicky thing because we've become so ADD. We're like, oh, we need something new, something new. It's like, no, this is a good product. The players are good. The product in the playoffs, it rarely suffers. And I don't think we need to over, like, this is an extreme makeover. Like, the league,
yeah,
is,
I mean,
good.
I'll give a good example, and not to throw a barb at somebody, but Bill Barnwell, a terrific NFL writer for Grantland today, wrote something about how to fix the first round of the NBA playoffs. And other than, you know, and to me, it essentially turned it into ping pong. It's like, if you win 3 in a row, then you win the series. Like, okay, that's fine, I guess, but it doesn't need to be fixed.
Right. Yeah, I mean,
it's not really broken.
We had 5 out of 8 road teams this weekend win a game 1.
Yeah.
Like, that's unexpected, and that's cool, and that shows me it's working. You know, and it's a small sample, but... Like,
Charlotte-Miami was compelling.
Yeah.
You know?
I think if you pay attention, like, there's legitimate talent all over this league, and you can find it. And like you said, like, Washington's going to get better. You can develop these, like, watch them develop in front of you. That's a fun process. Like, we got to watch the Thunder develop for years and take that next step, take the next step, take that next step. And that's fun.
That.
Yeah, that's a fun thing to see that growth and, like, oh, I wonder what step they can take next year.
Yes. I think we should just be in charge of this. Well, maybe we shouldn't run for coach. Or you shouldn't run for coach. I like how I lump me in there. Like, I'll be on your bench.
I feel like I could be a co-coach / executive of the league.
Okay. No conflict there.
I would say this. The ESPN never had an NBA chat host. And I kind of helped usher in that position for a couple of years. I could do that with the NBA, co-coach, co-executive.
I wouldn't bet against you.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that. That's mostly because I know you're somebody who values, you know, hard work and pitch perfect.
Right.
I think are two very important things for when it comes to me judging people.
I'm a real go-getter if the getting doesn't have to happen outside of my apartment.
you're a go-getter as long as Die Hard 3 is about.
Right.
I'm sorry, there's no Die Hard 3.
Die Hard with a Vengeance. I was willing to let it slide.
Yeah. So.
Let me ask you one question before I let you go. One question before I let you go.
All right.
Because you brought him up earlier. And I actually am a little conflicted on this now. Do you enjoy watching James Harden play basketball? And let's just cut that down to offense. Like, forget the defensive problems. Do you enjoy watching him play offense?
I do. But I get frustrated with it because he's really close to, like, Dwayne Wade when they beat the Mavericks territory.
Yeah.
In terms of his ability to get to the line. And I don't really like watching free throws that much. Well, not 80 of them.
Right. And you've watched a lot of free throws the last 2 games.
Yeah. It's not my favorite part of basketball. No, I mean, I think – the one thing I like watching James Harden, the thing I like figuring out is how he does it. Because whether it's the beard and stuff, like, I mean, when he dunks, like, I'm always surprised.
Okay.
Right? Like, when he does, like, that one-handed kind of, like cockback, like, tomahawk dunk, it always catches me off guard that it's like, oh, yeah, he because he doesn't move like that.
No.
You know, he's not a guy who runs around the court and you're like, oh, watch out, this guy's gonna. It's not like Westbrook.
Right.
Who, like, looks like he could dunk from anywhere.
Right.
You know, he's moving slower and stuff like that. So, I don't know. Yeah, I do. You don't? I guess I'm going to say I do. Let's disagree on this.
You don't
like watching him.
No, I used to love watching him, and even I loved watching him last year, and I think it's just a little too much. And I don't really have a problem. I don't think, like, oh, flopping's ruined the league or anything. But I am, and maybe it's because I watched too much Kevin Martin this year, but I do I do hate watching a guy get slightly bumped and throw his head back. Like, that's really starting to get on my nerves. Like, I'm flopping, whatever. It doesn't bother me. I'm fine with it. It's part of the game. It's a strategy. It's within the rules. Like, you can do it. I'm fine with that. But the offensive flopping where you just throw, you don't make a basketball play. You just run into someone and then flail. I don't like that. And he's done that so much. And it's an effective strategy for him. He's a great scorer. And he knows how to get to the free throw line. But I miss him because he has such a sick handle that he used more and more when he was on the Thunder. I miss seeing that that side of his game. So I think it's more of just a decline in entertainment. I still like watching him, but it's not as much as I used to.
I don't know if this will ruin him for you or if it'll help. Watch him. I think he's figured out the way to attack verticality.
Okay.
Better than – and this is coming from a center in this league that we've previously talked about on this podcast. So I'll let you – speaking of True Detective, let's see if people can figure it out. What he does is he hits people in the stomach.
Yeah.
So when you go vertical and you get hit in the stomach and create contact there, what happens? People double over.
Right.
You know, they lean down. So, I mean, he's figured that out, and he does it. And I feel like he's a guy, he's maximized his athleticism 100%. And at the same time, he's so confusing to watch. It's fun.
Yeah,
he's a very confusing player to watch.
He just used to be much more Manu Ginobili than he is now, and I love watching Manu. I could watch Manu all day, and I just miss that about his game. I wish he was more into that side-to-side rather than the north-south kind of thing. And but he does have – I do enjoy that sneaky athleticism. It's like when Fat Carmelo used to dunk or when Paul Pierce used to dunk. Like, all of a sudden they would dunk on somebody. Like, where did that come from? Because they're, like, oddly proportioned as human beings, not just because they're so tall, but they don't look like athletes.
How different would you view about him as a player if he shaved his beard? Like, what? Like, can you wrap your head around what?
Oh, I'd want him kicked out of the league. I don't even believe he has a jawline.
It's. I feel like it's a great strategy if he, like, kind of wants to let himself go in the off season.
Oh, it's a brilliant strategy.
What I mean? People take a picture of him at, like, Tao or something like that in Vegas, and nobody will be like, "Oh my God, look at James Harden! It's huge," because no one can tell.
Right.
It's all beard. Well, your beard could potentially cover like just massive jowls.
So Tyreek Evans needs a beard. I feel like we're a long way away from this, but the post-career Tyreek Evans and Shabazz Muhammad eras, where they're not playing anymore, they're just really going to let themselves go.
How dare you say that about Clipper killer Shabazz Muhammad?
He knows how to do two things: get kicked out of rookie transition programs and score on the left block. He's really good at both of those.
That's a valuable skill set.
Yeah, no, if that was on my business card, I'd be very happy.
I know you could do one of those.
I could definitely do one of those.
You could get kicked out of the rookie transition.
No, in record time, quicker than Shabazz did.
Hey Zach, I gotta go cover a practice.
Hey,
so I can disappoint my dentist in my coverage.
Well, why don't you get to that disappointing coverage? We can read you in the Orange County Register, follow you on Twitter @DanWeikeSports. Thank you so much.
Always fun. Let's do it again.